Planning Commission Special Hearing for March 21st, 2019.
I had parks at 4.
Okay, so it's turned on whenever you want to start.
Oh, where's Chris and Jeff?
They're not going to be here.
They didn't tell me.
Yeah, well, I've got 6 o'clock.
Let's start this thing. Could you please take your seats and not piss me off?
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. A few more people here than we do for our usual vacations and lot line adjustments and stuff. Just at the opening the hearing now, I'd like to just go over a couple of things quickly. The purpose of the meeting is to review this dredging issue that is.
Can you speak up, please?
Well, I can. I don't know if this thing, does this work?
Yeah,
it works. Oh, it works a little bit. I can talk louder. I can talk real loud. Anyway, so we're having a public hearing on this for people to be able to learn about the project and to. Boy. Do these things go louder?
Carolyn, they're saying they can't hear us.
I kind of want to sit back and try to relax here a little bit, but if I have to lean forward, I will. Anyway, as we mentioned, that we're here to learn about this project, and we'll have opportunity for people to voice their opinions about it. I guess one thing we want to kind of mention at the beginning is that we have a couple of presenters, one staff presentation and one proponent of the project. And then we'll allow this time for the public comment. I just wanted to make a couple. One comment is that, I know that everyone will be looking at this as a kind of a bigger picture, but what we really are talking about today is dredging. And I think that, you know, as we go through that and as we make our comments, we need to remember that that's what we're talking about and not all the other sorts of issues that might be associated with this for some folks. We're going to have a limitation on the, can't hear me still? We will, during our comments for and against, we'll have a limitation of 3 minutes per speaker. And when we get to that point, we'll have you identify yourselves and where you live, and if you want to put your email address and address on the papers in the back, that way we can contact you if there's some more information you need to get. So and first I'd like to know if anybody has any objections to this board hearing this on jurisdictional grounds. Okay, hearing none. Next, I'd like to find out if we have any ex parte contact that any of our commissioners would have that they would feel that they not needed to recuse themselves. So hearing none there, we will have a brief comment by the, well, first of all, I should introduce a couple other folks we have here. We have Jim Hosley and Nick and Nate McClintock, know his name as well as my own, but we'll have a brief presentation by our new community development administrator, Carol Johnson, who'll kind of get some more things started here.
City is working with the Lane Council of Governments,
Okay. We have the applicant represented by Steve Pfeiffer and Seth King, who are right there. And we'd like to hear the staff report first from our folks that we have developed that for us.
Okay.
So if you want to give us that, then we'll
go to
our...
So thank you, Carolyn, for the introduction. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
Try to speak loud here. I'm Jacob Hollister from the Lane Council of Governments. Henry, my colleague. Henry did the lion's share of the work in preparing the staff report. He and I put sort of the finishing touches on it and reviewed it together. And so it's sort of our collective product that you have in front of you. As Carolyn noted, the Lane Council of Governments is a member agency. And so we literally have a council that is made up of government agencies in Lane County. So anything from the utility to the school district to fire districts. And so we provide services to those entities and their COGS throughout the state of Oregon. And we have arrangements also with communities in places like Douglas County. We work with communities in Curry County and now working with a community in Coos County. So we see our mission as essentially extending to other communities that don't have a COG. The opportunity there is to provide a very wide range of services, and one of those is planning services and support. Carol mentioned that one of the reasons entities utilize this is to provide sort of another perspective, a neutral perspective. It's also common that communities use this because the capacity, the ebbing and flowing of applications is hard to stay on top of, and we have a model that allows us to address that a little better. So Carolyn got in touch with us in December and have no experience before that formally with this application. The work that we do in communities outside of Lane County is not work that we pursue actively. It's not work that we've tried to grow. So it really is an opportunity for us to help communities who reach out and don't have a COG of their own. So we see that as an opportunity to help. I wanted to touch on our application today is for the suite of applications that are associated with the navigational reliability improvements, this dredging proposal by the Jordan Cove Energy Project. City of Coos Bay, package file 187-18-00053. So the applicant's request is fourfold. There are four applications that are related to one another. One is a map amendment to the Coos Bay Estuary Management Plan to change the designation of approximately 3.3 acres in the bay from 52 NA designation to DDNC DA designation. We'll talk a little bit about what these designations are. Some of you are very familiar. The second is a text amendment to the City of Coos Bay Comprehensive Plan for the purpose of taking a reasoned exception to statewide planning goal 16, which is the statewide planning goal that addresses estuary resources. That is the only way that map amendment can be authorized is through a granting an exception to that statewide planning goal. Third, an estuary and coastal shoreline uses and activities permit for new and maintenance dredging in the DDNCDA estuary zone. And four, an estuary and coastal shoreline uses and activities permit to allow an accessory temporary dredge transport pipeline in the following estuary classifications. Can everybody still hear me okay?
Okay.
So as mentioned before, there's a number of things that are happening relative to this sort of macro level project. There are four dredge permits that are being processed locally. There is one dredge area four, that is within the city of Coos Bay city limits. So there are three others that are being processed by Coos County concurrently. That is a process that's running parallel to this. So our focus is on. So location 4. Bridge area 4 here is at the bend there across from the airport, very close to the airport. That's the only portion of this that's within the two space city limits. Here's a closer picture that was provided, 3.3 acres. You can see the deep draft channel there. It's adjacent to it, and the proposal is to increase safety and reliability by dredging out essentially making it a less difficult corner. There is a pipeline, as noted, it's a concurrent application that runs along and flanks the area connecting down to the other dredge areas, and you can see here portions of it are submerged and portions of it are elevated. These can serve as graphic images to help the conversation going forward as well. I want to make sure we have some good imagery that we can look at. So the Coos Bay Estuary Management Plan, we talked about these aquatic management units within what we refer to as CBEMP, often in the staff report, that acronym. Those different aquatic units, or management units, are natural aquatic, conservation aquatic, and development aquatic. The principle there is that as you progress from natural to conservation to development, you're allowing higher and higher levels of human impact. And so the natural aquatic area is intended to be the most natural in the development, that which allows the most human impact. And so the proposal is to make a change from what is currently natural aquatic to the development aquatic. So that's the proposal that we're looking at, and that is the proposal that requires a Goal 16 exception. I'm not going to touch on all of the criteria here. Planning commissioners, I provided a memo in front of the staff report. That memo was intended to provide a sort of high-level, again, the staff report is where all of the criteria are evaluated. That memo intends to point out what we consider to be key criteria, because in a way they are some of the more subjective elements of the staff report. One of the things I want to point out from the outset is that in a commonly we would provide a staff report that has a staff recommendation. We determined to stop short of a staff recommendation. And what we've provided in the staff report is a conclusion. That conclusion is a conclusion based on the evidence that we had at the time of preparing the staff report, that the criteria can be met with conditions. And so that is our genuine finding, that there are subjective criteria included in the staff report, and that as policymakers and decision makers, ultimately the city council, will have in their authority and their discretion to make a decision. I also look forward to hearing additional details from testimony today, which is a critical part of this process. We've already received a number of comments that I believe you have a report of, some of those came in today, so we haven't had an opportunity to really synthesize those. I imagine you have not either. I've spent a good portion of the day driving today, so I haven't looked at all those. But Goal 16, I just wanted to read the summary of Goal 16. This is statewide planning Goal 16. To recognize and protect the unique environmental, economic, and social values of each estuary and associated wetlands, and to protect, maintain, where appropriate, develop, and where appropriate, restore the long-term environmental, economic, and social values, diversity, and benefits of Oregon estuaries. So there is a process set out in Goal 2, which is the land use statewide planning goal, that sets out this process for exceptions to goals. And it's a high bar. There are four standards. The staff report lays these, there's a 5 or 6 page section of the staff report that addresses this exception dynamic. I'm going to touch on really the tip of the iceberg, which sort of leads you into the finer detail. So there are four standards that Goal 2 sets out, and that is there need to be reasons to justify why the state policy embodied in the applicable goals should not apply. Areas that do not require a new exception could not reasonably, cannot, excuse me, reasonably accommodate the use. The long-term environmental, economic, social, and energy consequences resulting from the use at the proposed site with measures designed to reduce adverse impacts are not significantly more adverse and would typically result from the same proposal being located in areas requiring a goal exception other than the proposed site. That's a wordy one there. They have to read it a few times. And there's more content there. The proposed uses are compatible with other adjacent uses or will be so rendered through measures designed to reduce adverse impacts. And so this is the sort of gateway to the remaining criteria that's laid out in front of you. And again, that memo, we're trying to be helpful in providing a page number for the specific elements of that to direct you straight to the page numbers in the staff report. Another key element to this is the concept of impacts. So an analysis of impacts, there's a number of criteria that speak to mitigation measures for minimizing impacts, for outlining effects and impacts. And attachment A, exhibit 5, in the applicant's materials is really the primary analysis that we performed. So it was really the focus of our analysis relative to impacts, along with referral comments. So the resources that were evaluated in that included significant habitat, water quality, noise, deep subtidal areas, living resources, recreation, aesthetics, and navigation. So the analysis that's laid out in attachment A, exhibit 5, which was conducted by David Evans and Associates, addresses the following relative to these separate individual impacts. So the type and extent of alterations, the types of resources affected, the extent of the impacts, the method employed to avoid or minimize adverse impacts. And so this was a key element in our evaluation, and in the staff report we point to that analysis consistently. So I'm going to jump to this is really the culmination of my staff report, and that is the conditions of approval. So we tend to focus on the condition of approval because that's the instances where we find we need to apply a condition to ensure that certain criteria are met. The staff report includes 5 conditions of approval. In the interim, since we generated that staff report, we've developed an additional 6 conditions of approval. And so I believe, do they have that in front of them? Can you hand it to them? And it stands to reason that, again, the process that we're engaging in here is to receive testimony, to learn about additional information. I noticed we received some information today that proposed some additional information. We haven't had the opportunity to evaluate those thoroughly. But at this point, we want to consider those. So condition of approval number 1 is that prior to the commencement of any dredging associated with the necessary and coastal shoreline uses and activities permit, we'll call Jordan Cove Project JCDP, shall provide the City of Coos Bay with a spill prevention response plan addressing the potential for any unanticipated oil spill or toxic discharge for review and approval. Prior to commencement of any dredging associated with an estuarine and coastal shoreline uses and activities permit, JCDP shall provide evidence to the Coos Bay Community Development Director of compliance with the requirements of the enclosed MOA, CRPA, UDP, as agreed upon and signed by JCDP and the Confederated Tribes of Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Siuslaw Indians. I see we have a bad comment in there. We'll fix that. This is an important agreement that was reached between JCDP and the Confederated Tribes. so it's a really crucial element to include as a condition. Condition number three, prior to the commencement of any dredging associated with an estuary and coastal shoreline uses and activities permit, JCP shall obtain and provide evidence to the Coos Bay Community Development Director of all necessary DSL and federal Section 404 authorizations. JCP shall provide the city with copies of these approved authorizations for the record. I noticed in one of the comments we received a suggestion for being more comprehensive in the potential federal permitting agencies in this condition, and so it's, that there's a certainly a strong possibility that we could strengthen this condition by including more federal agencies with the permitting interests. City of Coos Bay Public Works has identified an existing utility that is installed under the bay in the vicinity of the proposed navigational reliability improvements. Prior to the commencement of any dredging associated with the permit, JCP shall provide evidence to the Coos Bay Community Development Director that the proposed dredging activity shall not impact the existing utility. As a general condition, and in the event that additional analysis or circumstances reveal relevant and previously unknown or unmapped shoreland resources, all dredging activity must remain consistent with the CBIMP policy number 17, which is the protection of major marshes and significant wildlife habitat close to shorelands. Those are included in the staff report. What I'm about to introduce, these six conditions, the conversation that was had, and we have internal counsel who recommended that attachment A, exhibit 5, which again is this impacts analysis element, has particularly in section D of that exhibit, there's a requirement to outline how impacts will be mitigated, essentially. So the applicant has already proposed these, but we need to institute them with that hook as a condition. So these are things that the applicant has already described. We've added a little bit of language to ensure that there's some clarity around these. And so condition number six, as a general condition, dredging associated with an estuarine and coastal shoreline uses and activities permit shall only occur during the OEFW approved in-water work window, which occurs between October 1st and February 15th. So this is called out throughout the staff report, but there was no place in our original staff report that officially where the condition held them to that in water work window. JCP shall remove all equipment associated with dredging activities at the expiration of the in water work window. I'm going to try to get through these a little quicker here, just a few more of them. Prior to the commencement of any dredging, JCP shall submit for review best management practices pursuant to Chapter 9.20 of the Coos Bay Municipal Code that will be implemented to minimize the extent of noise generation to the extent possible. Prior to the commencement, JCP shall submit best management practices that will be employed should turbidity levels remain above ambient background levels greater than 200 feet from dredging operations. JCP shall ensure all floating and submerged dredging equipment operating in the bay is clearly marked with day signals and light signals in accordance with U.S. inland rules of the road. JCP construction safety inspectors shall be on site during any time dredging operations are underway and shall be responsible for warning any recreational boaters who enter the construction area. And finally, the final condition that we have developed at this time is JCP shall ensure that sections of the pipeline across the federal navigation channel are submerged on the bottom to allow for vessel passage. Sections of floating pipeline shall be temporarily removed to allow for vessel passage when necessary. So these are conditions that are, or measures rather, that are referenced by the applicant, but we're adding them as official conditions called out and elevated at that level. Carolyn's sharing a note with me that the reminder that at this level, Planning Commission is providing a recommendation to the City Council, and that decisions around final inclusion of conditions will be ultimately a decision of the City Council. So at this point, providing a recommendation That is staff's report. Condition number 12 is that as a general condition, JCEP shall be responsible for costs of city review of information associated with the project conditions.
Jake, that one was added back in the PowerPoint this morning.
Okay, that concludes your...
That concludes staff's report.
Now we'd like to hear from the applicant. We're looking at, I suppose, about a similar period, 20, 25 minutes, something like that.
I'm sorry?
20 minutes or so, is that about all right?
Sure.
Thank you. Lots of...
This sounds like it does. Everybody okay with that? Chair Burke, members of the commission, Steve Pfeiffer, I'm a land use attorney here tonight on behalf of the George Wood Mansion Project. 1121 West Gooch, Royal Murray, 97204. And what I'll do, and I should be able to do this in 15 or 20 minutes, I'll summarize, and it will be summary because Jake and Linger's report is pretty thorough. But I'll give you a little bit of context, and then I want to talk a little bit about the conditions, most of which I don't think I've seen anything past condition number 5 that there's subsequent to the staff report. That's fine. And then I want to talk about a process going forward at the front end so that everybody in the room, if they share that view, where we can go from here in terms of how long you'll be willing to, for instance, accept testimony. Many of you by now are more than aware of the Jordan Cohen's project. Starting on the east, 230 miles east of Coos Bay, the Millennium Oregon was a pipeline proposed that would come this way in a variety of routes and end up at Kankenta. Pipeline. And these are all, as I'll summarize, the subject of other land use applications. But as Chair Burke pointed out, I really do this to point out what this one is not, which is some of those. The pipeline that would cross, 36-inch gas line, generally, under the bay, and that hearing was Monday night in North Bend, from Kentuck to come up into North Point, hit below the highway, below the Three River, south of the bridge, back under the bay, and come up at the Jordan Cove site, warehouse or mill site. And then at the mill site, or at the Jordan Cove Energy site, would be the terminal. And the terminal itself consists of tanks, and you've probably seen renderings of it, but it's a natural gas terminal which will convert that gas into a shippable form. There'll be a slip proposed at the western end, not far north or slightly east of the northern edge of this turn, that would accommodate two vessels that in turn would be the outbound ships and they would use the central. Every one of those components, and there are about, right in my head, 9 applications pending in 2 counties and 2 cities, are Jordan Cove projects. In other words, they're only necessary to accommodate the Jordan Cove Energy Project. This one is slightly different. This one, as I'll summarize, as you've read in the application and in the staff report, and as you'll hear from George Wales, Captain George Wales here, at some point tonight, who's worked with a couple of our pilots. This one predates the Jordan Cove project. This is simply an attempt to improve the efficiency of the channel to accommodate vessels which otherwise will have to hang offshore in weather conditions for periods of time that Captain Wells to talk about, and eliminate that delay by literally improving the ability to navigate through these four corners. I mean, you can see it's really improving the apex of corner number 4 in that right-hand turn. And again, I'm happy to answer questions, but at some point you'll be able to ask the person who is guiding those ships through that existing and proposed channel improvements. The reason I make that point is this is one that, again, this is the purpose of this application exists with or without the Jordan Cove project. If the Jordan Cove project had never arrived or disappeared tomorrow, I think Captain Wells and others would say, as the record shows from Port of Coos Bay and Elizabeth Longer, these improvements need to be made. I just make that point for context. That is, as the chair pointed out, it's a dredging application. In a simple way, that is what it is. The application again speaks for itself. There are 3 other corners to the south. They're depicted up here. They've been the subject of a hearing 2 weeks ago tomorrow in front of the county. It's literally the same criteria. The way I think of the exception process similar to the variance process that you have, you and other areas, city and county and state has in their code, except it's a state variance. It's a variance not to your local code, setbacks, height limits, whatever the standard is, somebody seeking an adjustment or a variance from for hardship, you as probably heard many of them. It's a variance from the requirements that the state handed down beginning in 1975 to every city and county about how they were to plan and zone their respective communities. In your community, that includes the estuary and another coastal communities. Many communities, as you well know, they don't have that. They're guided by other statewide planning goals. This was Goal 16. That's really the way I think of the variance. Now, criteria are different. Burden proof, I believe, is much higher on your section. We see far too goal exceptions in this state, throughout the state, than we see variances. There are probably more variances than any given night in the state than there are goal exceptions in the last 10 years. They are not common. But there's a pretty solid guideline and set of regulations and rules that are addressed in the application of staff report, which are the criteria that you, the council, and everybody else who testifies tonight per our comments need. Again, I'll open up to questions at the end in terms of specifics about how the activity might occur, what the activity consists of, if it isn't already answered in your review. I want to move on to the conditions in the limited time I have, because really just put those on the table. Conditions serve a purpose, as Jake points out. And as an applicant's attorney, and as somebody who often has to defend decisions that have been approved by the local city or county, conditions are vital. Because conditions allow a community and an applicant to point out that what they said they were going to do is not just a promise or a suggestion, it's binding. And if it is reduced to a condition, it's simply not as much of a commitment, it's not as strong. We are not afraid of conditions. In fact, I welcome them for a variety of reasons. These conditions, I've only seen the first five, but I've had chances now to see the rest of them. Again, that's not a problem because we'll have time to talk to them. The first four are, and of course, we support the staff recommendation, but we also support the first four conditions. There are some clarifying language that, if the record is left open, we might suggest on a couple of them. And the one that comes to mind is condition number one. It says, prior to any dredging, there shall be a spill containment plan. Those are essentially binding best management practices. I'd like to think in this process, and this is our goal, I'm hoping very hard to take that to another level and actually put that in the record before you make the recommendation so that that condition could shift from a future undisclosed plan has to be submitted to the plan that we propose as you may modify has to be implemented. It's just more certainty. Same thing with the turbidity one, same thing with many of those other conditions. I actually hope to take this record through subsequent submittals if we have the opportunity to a more detailed level of literally those best management practices. Not a commitment to provide before dredging occurs, but actually show you what they are and let you work on those and modify them as necessary. The only reason I haven't done that to date is those are going to flow from the parallel state and federal permitting process. And many people in the room know. For this activity to occur, even if the city were to approve it, same thing with the county, it will not happen unless all other state and federal regulatory requirements are met and permits are in hand. That's the 404 permit and the removal bill permit that may be familiar with the DSL. Every one of those has to be in place as well. That's the primary reason we have no problem with the condition that says you don't get to dredge until you show us the capital permits because we're not going to be able to do it until then anyway. The problem is those BMPs largely, or those best management practices, which are essentially the requirements by which you undertake the activity to address noise, turbidity, and other impacts, are much more in response to the state and federal permitting process. Their criteria are different, and we have to take it to a greater level of detail in their process, and those processes are not as far along as this one. So I'm having to press engineers for details and commitments, and they're saying, but what if the court decides they want to do it differently? That's just a practical problem I have. But that's my comment on the conditions. One through four, a little bit of clarification on the problem. Number five is an interesting one, and essentially it's an inventory. We don't have any resources at that point, we're on the inventory. There's an open question of what newly discovered resources look like. I'll just work the staff on that and the remainder of those conditions. Most importantly, the Confederated Tribes, which is condition number two, I think. Is it two? I would particularly emphasize We have to demonstrate compliance with, and I want to talk to the tribes at some point about what that would look like. It's kind of a, one of the main elements of that is how do you deal with cultural resources that are not known at this time but become apparent or discovered during the activity, whether it's dredging, whether it's building a road, whether it's putting the foundation in for an office building. The UDP, or Unanticipated Discovery Plan, is designed to make sure that if resources of that type that are not known are found, what the process is to make sure that they're protected. And we just have to think about how to improve that condition, otherwise the concept is fine. And again, the rest of those, I have no doubt, many of those, as Jake pointed out, are consistent with what we said in the application. For instance, no work outside the open. That's a given. And it's tourism, and it would be very difficult for us to not agree with that condition because, frankly, that's what we did in the application. The last point I'll make before I open up any questions you may have and we can move forward is going forward. And you've been here before, and I'm here, and I talked a little bit to Carolyn and Henry and Jake about this. Well, here tonight, you'll hear from a lot of people, pro, con, neutral included, and there are other people who aren't here tonight. For a whole bunch of good reasons, and they're going to expect an opportunity to participate. Secondly, as the city attorney will tell you, there's a statutory requirement that says if anybody shows up tonight and asks if the record be left open and the hearing be continued to a second hearing, you're obliged to grant that request. And that's fine. You have a choice of which of the two. It's basically, do you want to hold another hearing or do you want to set up a process where people can submit new information over a period of time? And all I'll say at the outset, and I really say this for the benefit of everybody, I'll ask that this record be left open at the end, because I'll have a chance to come up briefly at the end of the testimony. I'll come back and ask that the record be open for not less than 30 days. And I've got just a suggested timeline with some dates that I shared with staff earlier today. I'm not going to suggest you have to listen to me. It's just a starting point, and you'll work with your staff at the end of the night of how you're going to move forward. But for other people, right here, I'm just suggesting that we really consider that. You have to do one of the two that we plan on leaving this record open tonight for testimony, not only for people who are here, but for people who are not here, and not only on issues that you're here tonight, but from any issues that they may want to raise for these parties. So with that, I'll stop there and open myself to any questions you may have now or later.
Later.
No.
I don't have questions right
thank
now.
You. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, as we've discussed earlier, we're now going to open the meeting for folks that have something to say about it. And we'd like to hear first from those people who are proponents of the process. And as I mentioned, we'd like to keep your comments to about 3 minutes. If somebody has said it's exactly the same thing you were going to say, rather than having us have to memorize it, let's just raise our hand or say ditto or something. But let's not have just saying the same thing over and over again, if we can help that. And that's just going to help us all get everybody's opinion on the table and help us to make good decisions. So with that, who would like to speak first? Dave, if you'd go to the lectern and give us your name and address.
My name is Richard Dibovic. I'm terminal manager for Roseburg's Goose Bay Shipping Terminal, 66237 Jordan Cove, North Bend.
Before you get started, I'm elected for whatever reason as the timekeeper, so I'm going to keep time for the 3 minutes. And when there's 1 minute left, I'm just ready to say 1 minute. It's probably a good idea to start right now. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Fair enough.
Thanks, man.
Previously, Roseburg has submitted a letter of support for the NRIs in question, and I'm here to reaffirm that support. The approval and completion of the NRIs will increase the margin of safety for the marine vessels coming to our terminal, both transiting in and out, due to wind conditions and weather. We are normally seeing delays, and some can be quite expensive. The current weather issues and size of the vessels that are arriving for loading operations are again delayed due to wind, fog, rain, swell, waves, etc. The safety of the vessel crew, the safety of the pilots, the safety of our harbor is all at stake with this, with, and can be increased with our safety by making these dredging improvements. The transit delays for bulk carriers add cost to Roseburg. They add cost to the agents that are associated with facilitating the vessels from our customers, and they add cost to our customers that have been with Roseburg for over 50 years, mostly out of Asia. The size of the vessels, and I'm just going to, we've been loading vessels since 1968, but the vessel size increase, I'll start with 2006. The average grain capacity in cubic feet was 3.368 million cubic feet. In 2012, the average vessel size was 3.6 million cubic feet. Currently, the average grain capacity is 3.728 million cubic feet. And regularly, I'm asked if vessels of 4.6 and 4.7 million cubic feet can be loaded at our terminal. They can. However, the NRI improvements would make that hugely more safe. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Someone else?
My name is Gordon Foyles, and with the Coos Bay Pilots, I'm one of the ship pilots. I also have a letter of support in. You guys have read it, I'm sure. I'd like to speak specifically just to the NRI number four. Historically, it's been a problem term for us. You know, this goes predates anything Jordan Cove has going on. So it's an area that silts in. It's a sharp turn, and the sand coming off the flats there silts in that turn. So the NRI for us would be a boom. Open that turn up. It softens the turn quite a bit. And so the decrease in the radius of the turn, or the increase of the radius, pardon me, in the turn, makes it so the ship doesn't transfer in the turn so much. And during high wind times, we have to go in a lot faster, which increases the transfer of the vessel through the turn. So it just makes a more difficult turn the way it is now than when the shoal's in. It's the Army Corps of Engineers maintains that turn annually. So every year they're down there cleaning that turn out. And it's in the lower bay, it is the worst of all spots. So for us, it would be a huge shoal. If you have any questions.
Would it give the lineup going through the North Bend Bridge a better chance?
Yeah, so as you're coming through, come out of the turn, and you're having to maneuver to stay in the middle of the channel, so it makes the next turn, setting yourself up for the next turn, and it would make it easier. And it's mainly the outbound, because you're coming from a wide turn into a 300-foot channel. So it's about, I think it's about 500 feet wide in the turn, and it goes down to 300 feet. And it's quite a choke point. And with that narrow radius, it's the outbound traffic. With the new garnet ships coming in loaded, that would help that a lot, inbound, and of course, OCT also, or the ship terminal. They have now got the largest ship that they can physically handle at the berth, and it has its own handling issues. So that will help.
that, Rex.
Do we have anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this project? Do we have anyone here that would like to speak with opposition to this project? Well, we'll try to start at this side of the room. And
what's on this list? What's the
list? Yeah.
Yes, I don't know where you are on the list, but you get to go first anyway.
Okay.
And then we're going to use the list. Thank you.
My name is Larry Madigan, 93780 Hillcrest Lane, North Bend, Oregon. We live about 3 river miles upstream from this proposed dredging of city land. And overall, this is a huge project. We understand that this is just one of the segments of the dredging, but it's a massive project. There's more than 584 million cubic yards of dirt and sand, the rocks are going to be dredged. And even with, I find the red face test a little difficult for me to see it being passed, where I understand Jordan Cove is not the proponent of this project, or not the only one, but on all these graphics, if it's all Jordan Cove, the Jordan Cove representative was the first person to come up and speak and explain the project. So I'm considering a Jordan Cove project. That's as common sense, I guess, would tell me that. But without any of the dredging, Jordan Cove could still handle 99.51% of its shipment of product. 99.5% could be handled without any of the dredging. Habitat of the species would be affected indefinitely. Important to harbor seals, waterfowl, harbor seal haul-out areas, pumping sites, carrion spawning sites, and upland habitat for fishing. On our private land, we've actually restored habitat for the, we've created tidal marsh, we created coho habitat as a result of a public project. Whatever happened to the novel concept that the public sector should be good stewards and manage their crop lands that we've entrusted to them in a responsible way, so private landowners won't have to take up that restoration mandate. We also, as an aside, suggest that the Coos Bay estuary plan be updated. It's a 1970s plan, it's 40, 50 years old, and frankly, it's out of date to even handle something like this. In closing, my wife Sylvia and I are opposed to this project, and we respectfully request a 60-day open venue for comments. Thank you.
Okay. The next person on my list that I now have is Richard Dyvik.
He's already spoken.
Okay. Okay. How about George Wales? Spoke too. I'm not doing very good on names tonight. I don't know the people we have in the city. I don't know, but anyway. How about Chuck Erickson? I bet he hasn't talked yet. No. All right.
My name is Chuck Erickson. My address is P.O. Box 1083, Coos Bay. I strongly object to the proposed exemption from the current zoning regulations that are in place along the Coos Bay shoreline. These regulations were put in place to safeguard this estuary's habitat and were based on sound science when they were put in effect. Circumventing these regulations for corporate benefit is disallowing citizens of Oregon, who are the real stakeholders, the right to object to estuary damage that will happen from excavating mudflats that contain shrimp and clam beds. Dredging and destroying clam beds and shrimp beds will hurt our fisheries. Our fisheries support tourism and also ocean wildlife. Dredging will also impact crab production, and this will hurt commercial and recreation crabbing. It has become become obvious that our politicians have been polluted with influence money from corporations that are not invested in our community? Do you really believe Pamela cares about our safety or the unknown future damage this project will cause to our environment and our fisheries? My biggest concern is leaving the safety burden for our children and grandchildren. I cannot, with good conscience, support the LNG risk. Coos Bay's health should not be sacrificed for exporting Canadian natural gas. Thank you.
Jamie Faraday.
Jamie Faraday, 1017 Elm Avenue, Coos Bay. I have a testimony version, which is shorter, and I have a longer version that I'd like you to all have. But I apologize, I should be a good instructor and have a copy for each of you. I need this to the chair.
Yeah, we'll make copies. Schwartz.
There
for the record, Sam Schwartz, Field Box 33, Coos Bay, Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this matter, this very interesting dynamic for our community to deal with. So, as chair of Coos Bay chapter of Surf Rider, I strongly oppose the rezoning of the Coos Bay estuary plan as a foundation. We care for the ocean's beaches and advocate for healthy and flourishing marine environments. So, any mitigation of already threatened eelgrass, prime habitat to threatened salmon numbers, should be out of the question. Deepening and widening of the channel will increase flow in and flow out, altering the hydrology of our bay. An increase of turbidity would be detrimental to marine life and human life. Crossing the bar, boats go down regularly, crabbing. I, community here in Coos Bay that's geared more towards recreational activities, and I don't think we should really be sacrificing those positive directions that we're working really hard to build for some larger entity to come in and make these kinds of decisions for our day and for the health of our economy and the green life. So I'm just going to set that up, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Chris Shangrao.
Jan Dilley, Hall 23, Windsor, North Bend. You don't hear all kinds of things that wanted to read something. Comprehensive plan amendment was meeting for today. And I, my question is, how do you have an amendment that hasn't been accepted yet? It looks like a ploy to take natural aquatic land. If we have the procedure to take natural and acquired land, is that you would examine what is there and then mitigate another place for that. But just because this is water doesn't mean there's no living things. And just like north of McCullough, they suggested taking natural aquatic land and didn't even bother to study what was there. Lots of people studied and found out how much they were displacing, and they have made no offer to mitigate, to have mitigated and to take care of it. And again, I ask you, you're going to give up natural aquatic water, 3.3 miles of it, and have they shown you what's living there and what they're going to destroy? And the other thing is that they're different dirt, dredging a lot. They propose to bring 110 and 120 ships per year. With 356 days in the year, you're looking at a ship coming in every third day. Can we live with that? And that means coming in, loading up, and going back out. And that will disrupt all the traffic because they have priority. And then the other thing is the dredging, is that they have not, except for a couple patches in North Bend that they were going to put it in, they purchased some land, and they're going to put that dredge there, the soils, and then also they're planning to put the pipe through it too. We're ending up with... Well, I think you should just make sure that they account for all the dredges they're going to put out and where they're going to put it.
Thank you. Where am I?
I'm Quinn Levine. I live at 573 South 12th Street in Coos Bay, since 1974. And so I know quite a bit about the debate that has been going on here. Now, I've written a comments on this issue, and I've just finished them today, but I only have time to print three copies because each one of them is 49 pages long. You see, this is why I was kind of happy when I didn't get elected to the city council. Because I would have had to read all this stuff. And now I can just write it, and well, I may read it, but that's my own stuff. That's really the best. Right? Jim, can you tell me, should I drop off the other copies at City Hall, or how does that work?
You can give them to us, we'll make copies for them.
What's all you want? Parts in the Lane County Cogs 1922, the French oil tanker Lindbergh was hit by a terrorist attack. Multiple explosives was set on fire. It took a while to put it out. Some people got killed. But I looked at a picture of that, and smoke is everywhere on this thing. But there's a little boat of people a couple hundred feet away from it that are surveying the thing. Well, let me tell you this. If that happened to an LNG tanker in this bay, those people would have been dead long ago. Because the projection is that if this occurs here, and LNG pours out, and there's a pool fire on the water, everybody within a third of a mile will be dead and burnt. A free cremation. And people further out will have problems too, varying from death to severe burns. And this is what we're missing here, and it's a completely irresponsibly sighted outfit that wants to come in here. And to see the coddling and spoiling that goes on the part of the politicians makes me sick.
Let's try to keep focused on the issue, which is
As I said, there are bigger issues here.
Well,
and you are a political outfit. You're not just a bunch of administrators.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to be big picture. Yeah.
That's why we're having this hearing. Anne Marie Slate.
Hello, my name is Anne Marie Slate. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Anyway, I'm in opposition, obviously. I've been to this podium before. And I have great concern about the dredging, the sound effects that people will have to deal with. The underwater sound is very detrimental to marine life. I'm concerned about our oysters, our clams, our recreational ways that we've already have already become tradition here. And this place is built upon, a lot of it is built upon tourism. I think this is a killer for tourism, this dredging and this great deal of devastation that will happen to our aqua, natural aqua water areas for the marine life. And I'm really concerned about the health of the people that live here and also the health of the people that will be trying to do this project. I'm in great opposition to this project, and I think we need to focus on what's already worked for this area and focus on our tourism and other means that we've gained for the economy. And we know that there's not going to be that many of us hired here to help with this dredging project or even the project as a whole. There'll be 14 people a shift after the plant's built, and that has nothing to do with the dredging, but we're really not going to get that many of us hired here. And that's why there's so many of us in opposition to it, besides the bad health that will be brought to this community. I, again, want to reiterate that the dredging can definitely spoil the fishing industry that we have here. And a lot of people are involved in this fishing industry. And it has a lot to do with the economy of this local area. So I will plead with you to vote against this dredging permit. Thank you.
Before we take our next speaker, I just wanted to echo what Nate's saying, is that we really need to focus on the item at hand, which is dredging, and many of you have. But I think that we know that there are lots of different views on how the economic and the other episodes that we see with Jordan Cove itself. And it's true that Jordan Cove obviously is a part of this, but still, tonight's subject is dredging. And this particular bit of dredging that happens to be in the city of Coos Bay. So I would just urge you to try to focus on that, because that's what we have to talk about and think about later in the meeting, and that's what the city council will have to consider at the next step. So with that important message, I'd like to offer Natalie Ranker spot. I didn't say that just for your benefit, by the way. It was just a comment.
My name is Natalie Ranker. I live at 414 Simpson Avenue in North Bend. As Dudenkova stated in their removal fill application, the dredging of the ship channel will provide an increase of 1-2% in LNG exports from the straightening of the channel. And I submit that this is one of their main reasons for dredging. Also, from their removal fill application, the distribution of 600 to 750,000 cubic yards of dredged material to the APCO 1 and 2 sites underneath the, or to the west of the North Bend Bridge, is contingent upon many issues, slope stability, adequate residence time of spoils, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It will require management of discharge positions and rates and to ensure water quality standards and site slope stability. They have not stated how these contingencies will be met. And I submit that they need to give us further explanation. And what about the composition of the dredge spoils? Jordan Cope stated that they're required to test them, but have not stated how. From years of prior industry, their deposits of heavy metals, toxic contaminants, and including arsenic. Will these and other contaminants be safe to deposit on APCO 1 and 2, which is less than a half a mile from Simpson Heights, which is a neighborhood of over 750 people? It also happens to be my neighborhood. And if the spoils are proven to be toxic, what does Jordan Cove do with them? They've provided no information about makeup or contaminant levels, and they have not suggested where they will be taking them. Also, from their removal fill application, 6.0, page 59, 5,700,000 cubic yards will initially be dredged from the ship and access channel. Periodic maintenance will occur every 3 years for the first 10 and every 5 years thereafter. This will result in 115,000 cubic yards of spoils every 3 years and 160,000 every 5 years thereafter. Along with the problem of where to deposit more spoils will be the constant resilting problem that will cause damage to oyster beds, crab larvae, and salmon fry. Coos Bay is dependent on these resources to bring millions of dollars into our local economy. Our coho are endangered, which is admitted in the Jordan Cove app, and 8 other species as well that they do not name. There will also be subsurface blasting, creating sound levels greater than 218 decibels, which will kill numerous salmonid species through barotrauma, which affects the inner ear and leads to immediate or delayed mortality. Finally, the noise from blasting, dredging, pile driving, and others will drive away tourists, and we depend upon them as our lifeblood and should continue to do so. Thank you.
Maria Frank. Thank you.
Three of my neighbors I was hanging out with before I came here were very concerned about this. presentation, and I hope that there are some of the best available science available put in place for the outdated Coos Bay estuary management plan. I hope that is updated and uses the best available science to do that. We also need to address the impacts of climate change when we do that, and I would like to see how we tie in estuary preservation and climate change together, because I know that they do work hand in hand, and we need to protect what we have here in Coos Bay. Also, safety needs to be addressed, and the safety, I'm very concerned about the safety of this dredging project and what dredging in the Coos Canal will do for people who recreate, people who want to leave the bay for fishing or recreation. I also am a surfer, and I know a lot of the surf community is very nervous about the impacts that this dredging project will have on our ability to use the ocean, and I really want the state to acknowledge all of the ways that this will totally change the use of the bay. Thank you.
Thank you. Rick Eichenstein.
Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. My name is Rick Eichstead. I'm an attorney for the Confederated Tribes of the Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Siuslaw Indians. Just to be clear, at the outset, the tribe at this point has not taken a position either in support or against this proposal or the overall project. We did submit some detailed written comments. I apologize, those were submitted today. I do want to touch on several of the points that we raised in our comments. First, I want to support a condition. I want to suggest some alterations to two conditions and raise one point for consideration. First, we want to strongly support proposed condition two, which is supported as well by the applicant, that would adopt terms and requirements of the memorandum agreement and the cultural resource management plan that's required as part of estuary management plan policy number 18. That plan was a product of years of negotiations between the tribe and the applicant, and will serve as a framework for the county, or excuse me, for the city to meet its policy 18 requirements. This is particularly important because the archaeological and cultural resource inventory has not been updated since 2002. So the discovery plan and other elements of the MOA and the cultural resource plan are particularly important. Second, I want to suggest some alterations to a couple of the conditions, our draft conditions of approval. As was mentioned, conditional approval number 3 requires that a DSL and 404 permit be received before work is received. There are a number of other applicable permits pending, including the Section 401 certification from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and of course the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission approval, which will ensure this project complies with the Natural Gas Act, National Environmental Policy Act. And part of that process is ensuring that there's actually a public need for this project. The other condition was one that was presented today, proposed condition of approval number 6, which adopts the fish window requirements. In our written comments, we point out that there's actually heron spawning that begins in the bay as early as February 1st. In fact, there's a report from DFW that says it could start as early as January. So we would request that be moved back from February 15th to February 1st. The last point I just want to raise is there needs to be a public need under policy 5 in order for this project to move forward. I would point to the record. There's a letter from the May 2018 from the Coast Guard that indicates that the waterway in its current state is considered suitable for LNG marine traffic associated with the proposed project. In other words, the Coast Guard is saying it's fine how it is. I understand that people want to expand it. There might be a desire to do it, but at least from the Coast Guard's perspective, there's not a demonstrated need for this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Judy McCaffrey. Judy McCaffrey? Jody McCaffrey, I'm sorry.
I have a question before I start too. Is there a way to access the record? Will it be like an online way to access?
We'll add everything on our website, yes.
Everybody's comments, so we can look at them. My name's Jody McCaffrey, and I live at, my address is P.O. Box 1113 North Bend, Oregon. And I have a lot of concerns about this. Before I start, I want to say that Rex Miller was a consultant once for George Hope, and I just hope that he will be neutral on anything he decides here. Jordan Cove is the applicant here. Not Southport, not D.B. Western, not the port. It's Jordan Cove. They're the name on it. But they're not the owner of the estuary. They got their permission to take out an application, but they're still not the owner of the estuary. We, the people, are the owner. And that's given a right to the Department of State Lands that are supposed to look out for our interest in this. There's other processes that need to go on. And this application, one of the reasons I got like a 72-page letter here and a ton of exhibits is because this application isn't complete. And they know it. That's why they want 16 more days. And I'm worried that I'm not against having more time, but I want enough time for citizens to be able to respond to all the stuff they're going to dump in. Because probably a lot of stuff that I've raised, they might satisfy with what they're going to put in. Because there's all these requirements. You just can't go out there and do a removal fill in a natural aquatic zone and not have follow rules. Okay, there's lots of rules. For instance, the one before we talked about Coos Bay Estuary Management Plan, Policy 5 has need requirements, but that's also spelled out in OAR 660-004-0022, and that's for getting an exemption. You have to do all this stuff. You need to do, especially natural aquatic, you just can't go out there and do what you want. You have to go through the process. And you have to show that there is a reason and a need and a purpose for you to do that that outweighs the negative impacts that you would have on fishing, navigation, and other things that are done in the bay. I want to read here the management objective that is found in Natural Aquatic 52 in A, and I have all these listed here. It says, this aquatic unit contains extensive eelgrass beds and associated fish and waterfowl habitat and shall accordingly be managed to maintain these resources in their natural condition in order to protect their productivity. To me, that says a lot. That means we're not going to go out there and just have them do something without really making sure that we're not negatively impacting the natural aquatic habitat there. Because our fishing already has, my dad was a fisherman, we already have reduced days. There are already problems with fishing. We need to actually do some restoration here, not more negative impacts for one project that isn't really viable. And that is part of the need process that you have to look at. So these other people are speaking to that. So I hope that you will look at everything and consider everything, not just Georgia.
Thank you.
And I hope to be able to turn this in, but I'm wanting to wait to see what you do with the record.
Okay, I'm not sure the pronounce is Ed Hughes or Hayes or. Sorry for probably saying that all wrong.
Thank you for the opportunity. I want to reiterate a couple of things. I'm sorry, I meant Hughes, 1170 Ferguson, Hughes Bay. Two things I want to reiterate a couple of things that have been touched on already, highlight a couple of things, and then introduce some new information, perhaps. I'd start with saying, as has been said before, that it's fairly clear that this dredging project is a Trojan horse that's pushing the carriage, and that carriage is Jordan Cove. So right up front, we'll get that straight. The second thing is that same public need, I'll address that. It says the applicant's proposal served staff's response to the CPC policy C, addressing public need. Applicant's proposal serves the public need by creating safer and more efficient navigation. I don't see how introducing doubling the size of ship into the size and number of ships into the channel is going to increase safety for anyone, and thereby promoting economic activity in the city of Coos Bay. Economic activity that's speculative and is at the cost of the natural resource-based economy and recreation economy that we have. So the two items, other items that I'd like to point out and then address the informational issue is Section 7.1, Natural Resources Hazard Strategy, NRHA. Preservation, protection of riparian vegetation, fish and wildlife habitat, providing flood control, etc. Staff response was that this proposal does not include any impact to the city of Coos Bay shoreline, habitat, or riparian areas. Habitat anticipates possible temporary, but not permanent impacts to shoreline habitat, including riparian areas. Again, Goal 3, agricultural lands. The goal is to maintain and preserve agricultural lands. Goal 3 concerns will not impact any agricultural lands. What we've learned in the last week is that U of L has been developing an estuary model over time. What it shows is that the dredging, proposing dredge, will increase salinity in the Upper Bay by 2.5 parts and in the South Slough Reserve by 2 parts. These are ecologically significant increases in salinity throughout the bay. The impact is not on site, it's bay wide. So, permanent impacts. These are permanent impacts. It will increase the winter salinity of our bay. Summertime is very high salinity, but flows are low. That high flow when there's salt water on higher marsh, it's going to change the vegetation across the shoreline of the bay, impacting not just the work site. This is a significant and bay-wide ecological influence. And I'd like to submit that. It's public. But I can submit that in comments, and I think that 60 days would be preferable. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for sticking pretty close to our 3 minutes. And we have 5 more speakers here, and we'll start with Sarah Crawford.
Ocean acidification is real.
for this information. This is happening. We must take responsibility for our kids. It is not about us. We are here to voice for them. And so that is what I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jan Hodder.
And that was in order to accommodate the extension of the North Bend Airport runway. This will be the second proposal to build a chunk off of the side of this most highly protected area, but it won't be the last. You as a city planning group should expect to receive an additional application from the Jordan Cove Energy Project to rezone another section of the 52NA as deep draft navigation in order to accommodate dredging work for an eelgrass mitigation project that is part of the proposal. There's critical biological functions that occur inside the ODFW dredging window. Herring spawning has been mentioned for one. These bays are high-performance ecosystems, and the winter time, which is when this proposed dredging window is identified, is the time of peak waterfowl usage. Just to offer a single example, my written comments will offer more. The City of Coos Bay's permit application, the work is proposing this won't be possible without the concurrent approval of an additional application that's been made to the City of North Bend, because the City of North Bend has to approve the tail end of the pipeline that is receiving the material that will be dredged from NRI-4. So I'd suggest you offer a condition at least to say that this, you shouldn't issue a permit for this unless there's concurrence with the City of North Bend for the other end of the pipe. The application uses some dated material to talk about the duration of the impacts and the intensity of the impacts. My written comments will address those, but suffice to say, I would characterize the substantiation they've used to characterize the length of the impacts or the significance of the impacts as insufficient. And one reason we could identify that is to treat all four of the NRI environments the same way in their treatment of the assessment of impacts. So I'll just close by saying again that I believe the assessment of the impacts of this as presented by the applicant are insufficient.
Thank you. Christine Moffitt.
I'm Christine Moffitt. I live at 700 Denise Place in Coos Bay. I'm going to speak to the development of the estuary plan that you're all referencing in these codes. Any changes in the Coos Bay management, estuary management plan zone should be addressed considering the aquatic system in its entirety. City of Coos Bay cannot ignore the processes that are occurring within other jurisdictions when considering impacts to a highly integrated estuary system. Accepting a piecemeal approach to this application for a specific variance without regard to the proposed changes put forth by the county, in the county, and in North Bend would not provide any holistic assessment of impact or resulting condition. We've already talked about the statewide goal that says you have to recognize the important environmental, economic, and social values and can continue to protect, maintain, and develop appropriately and restore. The major areas of impact today include dredging associated disruption, 3.3 acres of natural aquatic. Already spoken about that. These have a very important function in the whole ecosystem. The rationale for this change in zoning is to provide additional opportunities for ship access during rough weather. Although the requirements to evaluate a project in its entirety are not specifically in your procedures when this 1984 management plan was developed, I can attest that no one had any idea of the extent of this kind of development, the tools used, and the magnitude of such a project did not exist. Moreover, in 1984, the need for increasing resilience in coastal communities from the challenges of climate change, sea level rise were not considered. Because this limited view of 1984, we should not be precluded from considering these compelling issues today. The lack of foresight 35 years ago should not affect the decisions that you all are going to make. We do not need to make decisions blindly without data. And a year ago, area scientists, community members, and managers rolled out a comprehensive evaluation compilation of the aquatic community resources and updated information with current conditions made available as a digital resource. This work, the Partnerships for Coastal Watersheds, was supposed to be used to update the Coos Bay Estuary Management Plan. To this date, nothing has been done. We need to all work together as citizens and move us forward to move into a protected and resilient environment in Coos Bay.
Thank you. And finally, Marguerite Madron.
I need to be last. I'm Margaret Madron, Post Office Box 1083, Coos Bay. I'm here on behalf of the Bill Lackner, William Lackner. He's president of the Clam Fishers Association of Oregon, who's unable to attend tonight because of an injury to his knee. I'll try to skip over the things that have already been that many people have said. The most important environmental benefit of Coos Bay is the ecological productivity of this estuary. Things like eelgrass matter for healthy bay ecology. Construction and the day-to-day operation of the LNG facility will minimize the contributions that robust gliding tidal flats provide to the life cycles of the marine organisms that inhabit the bay. These include shellfish, chinook, coho, steelhead, dungeness, and red rock crab, plus numerous rock and nearshore fish. He talks about other animals. Here's a really important one. Our sand and mud shrimp sites will be harmed if construction is allowed to remove the mud flats. These shrimp are part of the food web that feeds our fisheries and other wildlife. Coos Bay sand shrimp are some of the last remaining healthy stocks in Oregon to preserve protection from habitat loss. He talks again about the inadequacy of the mitigation, the trading one public property for another for Kentuck. And he mentions that the state forced this mitigation remedy upon us without stakeholders at the table. In closing, he says, in 1 year period, Pembina has paid out $150,000. This was ended in September of 2018. There's a lot since then. To our elected representatives, how can the public have faith in elected representatives that accept campaign contributions that amount to nothing more than a legalized bribe for influence by a foreign country? The Planning Commission should not allow Pembina to end run our current zoning regulations that protect Coos Bay. Thank you, William Lackner, President, Clam Diggers Association of Oregon, Post Office Box 1083, Coos Bay, Oregon. Thank you.
Okay, he gets to it. Okay, now, thank you. And thank you all for your comments. I certainly think you've brought a lot of information to the table. And we do these things, I guess. Now we have we'd have some comments from the applicant to try to answer some of these questions.
Well, I don't know if I can promise that much. Before I go to the process that I mentioned earlier, my suggestion for you, and because I haven't read much of the material and I don't know if some bills yet tonight, it's really a high-level response that I have. And it's kind of as we expected at the outset. And trust me, I probably better than most people understand why this application, limited to a dredging management in one corner, generates a lot of the testimony about other aspects of Jordan Cove. That's not lost on me at all. And there are going to be other forums, and there are other forums where those very aspects of some of the things you talked about being terminal, there's a six-year reference, and the six-year reference has to include the construction of the overall terminal. Essentially, we're going to pay that one. And though the impacts, noise, power driving, and all the rest of that associated with the terminal, that is right. Just like concerns about, Jan raised concerns about pipeline and the stockpiling. Those are right. The application for that stockpiling, the pipeline application for, as many of you know, North Bend the other night, but the application for the stockpiling, APCO 1 West, hasn't been filed yet. Will soon be. Again. My point is, as the chair noted at the outset, say tonight's discussion and the relevance of the testimony to the criteria really is limited to the dredging. But it's not to say that you don't have a understandable concerns about other aspects of the project, and there are forums where they are going to be that relevant. It's just that tonight, and I say this in part because if you focus on this, it's going to be a more fruitful discussion at this level. It's not a Jordan Cove project, and I understand why you find that odd. The standard, if you read the staff report for the statewide goal exception, is the continuation of, it's a need, and you have to identify a need. Essentially, goal exception is three elements. Is there a reason why the statewide planning goal at issue should be deviated from? If so, are there other alternative locations where that deviation, in this case, dredging for the channel maintenance, in other cases, it's a resort or shopping center. Are there other locations where that activity or that reason could be met in the community without the same impacts? And if not, what are the impacts and are they minimal? That's simply the test. It is not a public need test. And public need isn't triggered in this application, as staff points out, because Oregon law makes it very clear that policy 5 and the commitment does not apply here. If this goal exception is approved, all policies which implement goal 16 are not applicable. Public need is a policy 5 question. It's not applicable. So all discussions of public need simply, I'm afraid, are not relevant. Now, if you want to morph public need as to the reason for the goal exception, in other words, the only legitimate reason for an exception to the goal is an identified public need, that's a credible point to make. But my point is, it's not policy 5, and our reason isn't public need. Our reason is what Captain Way is pointing to. And I think it's notable, you have yet to hear a single comment rebutting, or even attempting to rebut, the points he made as a pilot in the bay of the inefficiencies and safety issues associated with this channel that these changes aren't making. That's the question before you. That's the reason for the exception. If you find as a matter of substantial evidence that this record demonstrates that Captain Wales is wrong, there is no such problem with the channel, there is no, under certain weather conditions and otherwise, need to hang offshore to the detriment of shipping, then you could find that that standard isn't met. But I haven't heard it, and I haven't seen it either written yet.
Well, you would have heard it if people had...
Excuse me.
Hey.
I've got the microphone, thank you.
Yeah, hope you belong to it.
So, the point is, if you could come back at the end of the day to the point for you, it is a dredging application. It's not about power running. There is no blasting. There is no public need criteria. Policy 5 doesn't apply. The criteria are laid out in the staff report. Are conditions appropriate? Absolutely. Should there be revisions to them? I suspect there will be. And we'll probably propose some as well to tighten them up. But at the end of the day, it's back to the narrow thing.
A couple of questions I would just maybe pose. One is that we did have some comments from the Coast Guard that would seem to be at least a discussion about the actual shipping safety. I'm certainly not going to question the wisdom of a bar pilot that knows a lot about the bay, but I'm just making that is a comment that came up. And the other thing is that the blasting, now I understand there is going to be blasting done in the bay somewhere, but perhaps not on this.
Dredging the corner four. It's never been proposed, not mentioned in our application.
Not in this particular
absolutely
quadrant.
Absolutely not. And more importantly, the Coast Guard suitability report that people are referring to refers to virtually nothing that's applicable here tonight because it refers only to the Jordan Cove project. And as I pointed out, and as Bill's pointed out, and as Richard pointed out, the need for these channel improvements is not Jordan Cove. Will Jordan Cove benefit?
So sit down, man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a nice.
Hey.
We've had a good discussion.
Stand up and disagree. Stand up if you disagree.
The truth is hard to take. You're gonna go.
Well, if we're going to continue this meeting, we're going to be quiet. Do it.
We're going to stand up.
Yeah. You can welcome to stand up. Stand or sit, suit yourself. But we're not going to be shouting out. We're going to be polite to one another. That's the only way we're going to get through any of these things. You people have brought, on both sides, have brought valid points to the table. They're impressive. They made an impression, at least on me, and I would imagine they'd have on the rest of the commission as well. That's who we're talking to right now, not each other. And this gentleman has some things to say. He has a right to finish saying them. And then we'll close the hearing, and then the Planning Commission will discuss it. Are we okay on that with everybody? All right.
No.
Well, even if let's try to just live through it. Please.
I'll just move this process going forward, and my suggestion for resolution okay. To begin. You have a choice to make, which is to continue to a second hearing of your date of your choosing. Or you can close this hearing, but not the record. Leave the record open for it, but it's kind of standard to do that in two phases. And generally, it's 2 weeks per phase, which is the proposal that I mentioned this morning to staff. And I'll put some dates to that just so you have them, and I know staff has these. The proposal would simply be that the hearing time be closed with the record remain open, so people can still consider their testimony already. The first open record period would be for 2 weeks, and would close on, this is again a suggestion, on the 4th of April at the end of business, 5:00. That's a period, 2 weeks. People can submit anything, anybody can submit. It's an open record in true sense. The second period would be another 2 week period that would go to 4/18. And that would mean, that would be, anybody can submit, but it would be needed in response to what came in the first 2 week window. It's kind of what we approach this maybe typically. The third is a statutory requirement. The applicant's guaranteed at least 7 days to submit a written final argument, no new evidence allowed. In my sense, that could be reduced to 4 days pretty easily. Part of the reason I picked those dates to suggest is I understand, and staff will be able to explain, there's already a sense of when the city council hearing would be scheduled to hear this in about 2 months. So those dates are backed up and allow you to reach a recommendation and still have the recommendation in time for that council meeting. That proposal would mean that you would then have a decision for an evening. And I think it would be a special meeting again, as tonight is, Carolyn,
yes.
On 4:30 of April. And that would simply be at the end of that, a week and a half later, you would gather a vote, make your recommendation to the council, you are tentatively now set for the 5th of May, or the 21st of May.
The council meeting is the
21st of May.
Okay.
So I'm just going to leave you with that. You can do anything you want with that, obviously, but that's just a process on a something like that goes out, and it's easier to modify and start with. Pat, any other questions? I'm happy to answer.
Thank you. We'll let us discuss
sure.
Then.
Yep.
Would we...
Could I ask for a point of information? I'd just like to ask the harbor pilot, how many ships are coming in currently without this proposal?
We're averaging about 5 to 6 a month.
5 to 6 a month. Okay, so the dredging would be considered by you for 5 or 6 ships a month. That's the distinction I think this group is trying to bring to you.
Well,
and also, it really seems to me that you're getting legal advice from Pimpin's attorney.
Okay, I think that, first of all, I think we probably better not be having this discussion across the room like that.
Okay,
and that we have our own legal counsel here who's perfectly capable of giving us legal advice. We simply had a suggestion from the attorney of the proponent, which is how we're taking it. And I guess the only other comment I might make about ships in the bay, and I've grown up on this bay and lived here for 70 years, much of it spent on the railroad bridge where my dad ran for 53 years, and I can tell you the one comment would be that time was when there were a lot more ships coming in and out of this bay, and we managed to fish around them and clam around them and crab around them, and those were... We're different times, but the bay has known more shipping than it does right now, and some people would argue that those were, well, would argue what they would argue. At any event, should we take a break now?
No.
Well, it's 8:00. Been here for 2 hours. People may need to use restroom. I'm going to say that we're going to take a break, a 10-minute break. And we'll return back here at what would be, well, we'll say 13 minutes. We'll get back here at 7 or 8:10. Don't all have to leave at once, but...
Deciding on tonight.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
It's a recommendation to the city council or continuation of the, yes, of the meeting or a continuation of the meeting.
That's a very emotional subject.
Yeah.
Why is this?
Why?
We don't control the temperature.
Last shorter.
I've still got my jacket on, Will.
Yeah. It's a tough subject. Anyway, I don't really see how you guys can really discuss this tonight because there's only good material. We can't really discuss it.
And we got a lot of new material, so we may ask for a continuation.
We have a lot of stuff.
Maybe someday in the future.
Yeah, I think we'll
I do too. Yeah, we still want to receive material, but we got a lot of material tonight that I'd like to go through.
But in terms of the public hearing, we'll close that.
Yeah, we'll close it.
I was just going to say to you guys, I hope when it all comes down, and you know, when you guys make a decision, that you consider the health of the bay and the health of the people.
We'll make those decisions.
I know you will. Yeah.
Well, and ask for a continuation of the meeting. I think is only fair. I mean, we got this tonight. We got email. We just got this. And I still have part of the manual, part of attachment.
Yeah.
And it seems like I've been reading it all
night. I know, me too. I don't know.
Yeah. But did you see how the police have been out there all meeting? Oh, yeah. They came in instantly.
Hey, Carolyn, there's no 128 o'clock because it's a goal exception.
Because it's what?
It's got a goal exception attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have.
Yeah, that's what they were saying, but I've been freezing all winter, so I don't mind me. I don't know who is here representing the World Newspaper, but I guess this will be a big article in the World Newspaper.
Oh,
come in. But now I'm glad they were out. Oh, yeah.
Does that happen like that
up there? No. I don't think I've ever seen the police out there.
I just wonder what you say. It's like kind of
Yeah.
So we're just going to ask for
it. Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Oh, and.
It's been a little while, but I spoke to him.
Well, someday myself and my friend Diane O'Brien from this site, we started in Vegas when I was in
I'll read it.
Okay, let's get going. Everybody already went potty or went home. And I went potty, but now I want to go home. The police really got in here fast. They've been in the lobby all night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All night.
Well, I said 10 after, so it was pretty good.
We should have just closed it and continued it and gone home. But that's just my opinion. You know, who am I? What do I know?
So, do you see anywhere in here my name appears in this
document? Uh-uh.
Right.
And I'm almost done. I'm done, I think, with section A. And
no, the worst one was all I think. If you did, I don't know.
Well, but you're not dredging.
No. But you had some connection with it. Oh,
well.
I mean, the guy that's the manager is my neighbor. I don't know if I should have to say that.
Yeah, but I mean, well, Doug Eberling here, he's my neighbor. He's got a Coos Bay response.
Jim, 30 seconds.
I know, I'm on it. I'm right there, Jim. Right there.
All right, okay.
Probably a lot of people just left.
Yeah, they did.
Which is fine.
Yeah, it is. Wish I
could. I'm seriously conflicted on this thing myself, actually, man.
I kind of am a little bit of it. That's why I'd like more time to digest it and read the new material. Okay, let's get going.
Hear you.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to reopen now. Reconvene, I should say.
Yeah, reconvene.
To kind of sort of get ourselves restructured here. Officially, we're closing the public hearing. So that means we've taken the public comment that we're going to receive orally. What we're going to do is we're going to leave the record open and continue to receive comment, written comment. And I would like to have some help from staff with the timetable on that process and the availability of the city council and the availability of us and just kind of how we should lay out that timetable.
And the window that we can continue the hearing in.
We have to kind of do some counting. We have closed the public hearing.
Yes, we just...
So we need our meeting before that.
You would need your meeting before that.
And may I ask what, I thought you said something about May 21st or somebody did?
Well, the council meeting was scheduled for May 21st. Oh. However, that meeting date, we need to do another notice.
Okay. So I don't know how the others feel, but a day in May and then...
Well,
send it to city council in June?
Another special meeting?
Yeah.
To,
to be able to walk you through procedurally.
Right, let's think about the phases here, and these are phases that are just typical. The first phase would be opening up the records for submittals that address any issues. leave the record open for a...
Relevant to this.
Three-week period.
Okay.
And for that three-week period, any and all issues can be submitted and entered into the record.
Okay.
That period that ends at a date certain, but then there's an opportunity to open up a second record period, and that would be an opportunity to address issues that have been brought up in the previous period. So it's a sort of winnowing, that we leave the wide net open, but at some point we have to start concentrating on the key issues. And so another three-week period could follow that period where there's an opportunity for the submission into the record of additional testimony related to issues raised in the first period. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we're responding to the initial.
Exactly. But you're not raising new topics.
You're not bringing up new things, you're responding to what was submitted in the first 3 weeks.
Then, of course, there's a statutory requirement to allow the applicant an opportunity at least 7 days to respond to the sum total of content entered into the record. And then, so at that point, we're looking at how many days?
Nine. That period would be over. And from that point on, we would need at least 7 days ahead of your meeting to get it to you.
To get a packet to you.
So that would put you in, if you were going by Thursdays,
okay, well, 16. So materials can be submitted until what date positive then?
The first period would be to March 21st.
Okay.
No. No.
April 11th.
Okay.
The next period would be to May 2nd.
Okay.
1 week after that would be May 9th.
May I ask what day of the week that is?
Those are Thursdays.
All Thursdays?
Now,
okay, that's right.
That's fine.
You want to move this so that this, you know, your meeting date lands on your regular meeting date. You know,
if we started on Thursdays, why don't we continue this process on Thursdays to try to, so that we can, just a moment, please.
Yeah.
And so then we would go to what council meeting, what date?
Well, if you would wrap up on the 9th, and you would, let's say you go to, you would have a meeting on the 16th. The next available council meeting after that, where we could get to them in time, would be June 4th.
June 4th.
Okay.
Okay. You have a quick question here. Not giving testimony, I trust. What?
We have all these deadlines on these other projects out here, and one of our deadlines is April 12th and May 3rd. I just hate having them back to back. I mean, if you had a few days in between.
Well,
what for?
Yeah.
I will comment for hearings that are
it's
about to be held.
Just like you're doing. They have all these applications, and we've had hearings, and they've extended the comment deadline. Here's our comment deadlines right now. April 12th, April 17th, April 19th, May 3rd, and May 8th. So that's
but the days don't actually conflict. I mean, so...
But if you're...
The preparation is...
Well, what... Help me with this. What, you know, I mean...
Your commission.
You know, what would you people like to do?
3 weeks or 4 weeks, or it's up to you.
Well, we've also got an obligation to make a recommendation one way or the other to City Council. So we can't keep putting it off forever. So I think we need to have a special meeting to get some of these things resolved and listen to more comments, even if they're written.
Well, just for clarity, and would you weigh in on this name, please? The written comments are one thing that you would be able to look at those, but you've closed the public hearing at this point.
Right. There's no
more public hearing. The next time you meet, you would not be taking oral comments.
Right. No. Right. No.
Okay, because you said take public comments, so I just wanted.
To no, I said written comments.
Well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Comments from the public in written form.
Right.
Sure.
So, in the interest of accommodation, is there any adjustment we could make here that would be, wouldn't, just tell me where we're at with this thing.
Okay.
That's totally up to you. The council is also available. There's a council meeting on June 18th and a council meeting on July 16th, which means you would then.
Why don't we take the middle one there, June 18th, that council meeting.
Okay, and then pick a date for us to continue this to.
Okay, we need to work backwards. Yeah. So instead of April 11th, we're looking at April 25th. Instead of May 2nd, we'd be looking at May 16th. Instead of May 9th, we'd be looking at May 23rd. Instead of May 16th, we'd be looking at your meeting, and then would be on May 30th.
Okay.
And then there would be, let me see, prior to the council meeting on the 18th.
Okay.
Okay, just what is our pleasure on this, John?
Well, I got a conflict the third Thursday of every month.
Well, I kind of do too. I have Parks Commission at 4, but I made it out at 5. I had to leave early, and I ran home, and then I ran here. But I can make it. It's fine. Let's just leave it Thursdays. Oh, but you can't come? Are you on tree board?
No. Fire district.
Well, the other option we have, instead of having it on May 30th, perhaps you could have it on June 6th. That would still leave a week and a half before it went to the council. Would that be the time?
Okay, and that's still a Thursday? Or?
Yeah.
That's still a Thursday, or okay. You could have it on, yeah.
Why don't we do that? Does anybody have any real problem with that? Nope. Okay, well then, let's consensus on that and make that our, make it
okay.
So.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that our next hearing is June 6th.
Yeah.
Okay.
A second.
So your next hearing would be, you're saying June 6th.
Yes.
And I'm going to want to put my heads together with the city manager's office and the community development director to talk about that date on the 18th.
Okay. Okay. Fine with me.
And if they couldn't make that date on the 18th, we'd probably be looking to July 19th.
Okay.
Or July 16th. We'll figure it out.
Sounds
good. And I will note that would you give us the discretion to, the latitude, if we need to
move yes.
some
yes.
of these Thursdays, we can, and we would notify, we would put on our website and notify everybody who does the email address.
So we might okay. want to modify your motion to allow the city staff to make an adjustment in time if necessary.
Right, exactly, to be flexible with city staff.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, I guess that's our schedule.
I think we're kind of gone.
List those dates again.
She's...
Yeah.
So the first record period, this is all issues, ends April 25th. The second period ends May 16th. This is the addressing issues that were addressed in the previous period.
Rebuttal,
yes. Discussing
May what?
Oh, sorry, May 16th.
1-6?
16. 1-6. Then the applicant has the opportunity to respond by May 23rd with their final response. And then there is a June 6th Planning Commission meeting to reconvene and receive the record and essentially revise the staff report.
Yeah. And council tentatively the 18th of June.
Tentatively the 18th. And like I said, I want to go back and confirm.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but was April the 26th, was there a hearing on that date?
25th. Which is one of the dates that the first
that's
record period.
That's for older material?
Yeah, wait around. Then there'll be a second.
Oh, okay.
So I guess we've got that sort of straight. And I guess I'd just like to thank all of you for coming, and thank you for being pretty good. Helping me through my very first meeting and trying to chair this. So,
you didn't say that.
So, well, I wasn't going to say it up front. I mean, I would have lost all credibility there. Anyway, thank you all, and thank you for your comments. I think that it's obvious much thought, consideration, and study has gone into that from many of you. And we will take it in that kind of seriousness. So thank you.
Yep, thank you.
And we're adjourned. Pardon me? You can just put it on one of these.